From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 575, Debugging PowerShell with guest Josh Duffney, recorded Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. We've got a special show today. My guest is Josh Duffney, who is a DevOps engineer who works with automation and orchestration on Windows platforms. And he is an author of several Pluralsight courses, including Introduction to Regular Expressions and Debugging PowerShell in VS Code. And he blogs at duffney.io and speaks at various PowerShell and DevOps user groups, including the PowerShell and DevOps Summit in 2018. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great to have you here, too. And I actually got a comment from a listener that is related to the PowerShell movement as a whole. This is actually back from show 531. Which was testing PowerShell using PowerShell with Adam Bertram. So a little while ago that we recorded that show. And this comment comes from Brandon Padgett, who said, I appreciate the time and energy you've put into pushing Pester, Adam. Pester being the testing framework for PowerShell. I did want to make one point about code versus code part that was mentioned earlier in the podcast. I don't think there is a difference anymore. And I think we should really start pushing this way of thinking. And this is really this idea that there are developers and sysadmins that are different. We tend to still hold this toxic mindset that sysadmins and operations people are just script writers and then we're not developers. It takes a long time to break someone of this mindset and it promotes imposter syndrome. Let's be honest, I see a lot of PowerShell projects out there that are more developer than some projects written by developers in a language that is a programming language. You could listen to this podcast again and replace PowerShell with C#, and it would still be valid, because, yeah, it's the same practices, without a doubt. I think we're making great strides, and a lot has changed, but we're not there yet. The other part that I really love was the portion on culture, fires, and ticket mentalities. I pretty much word for word said exactly what Adam has said in regards to taking 5 to 6 times longer to automate a resolution. I felt like he was in my head for that minute. The automating issue resolution was a way of thinking about how I got into PowerShell and what I really learned from PowerShell. What I started doing back then was defining a good state as an inventory item. And when a device ran an inventory and the state was false, it would trigger the software deployment solution to deploy a package that would fix the issue. I've also used DSC as a watchdog sort of service where I would check for specific issues and have DSC repair the problems in some frail, problem-prone applications. This has always been my mindset, and I had the idea of work smarter, not harder that really pushed on me when I was growing up. Great episode as always. Really excited about the space and can't wait to see where everything is headed. Me too, Brandon, when we're certainly talking about this more and more. And I do appreciate your thinking around this idea that you have an inventory of things that your user should have or your machine should have or states of being that they need to be in, and that you simply make sure that is true, whether you use DSC or handcrafted scripts, however that looks. But I'm sure we're going to dig deeper into, you know, the increasing sophistication in PowerShell means the increasing sophistication of how we code them. So thank you, Brandon. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or via any of our social media. Every show is published to LinkedIn, Google+, and Facebook. And if you comment there and we read it on the show, we'll send you a mug. Great. Josh, we're talking PowerShell today, as you can tell. And certainly, I got to think you're a Pester fan.
I am. I mean, I love all things PowerShell, and Pester is just a natural framework to start testing it. As Brandon said, when you start to use PowerShell, you want to find better ways to automate it. And, you know, Pester is just automating PowerShell testing. So
right,
it's a natural fit.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I wrote that title for Adam Bertrand's show, I said, you know, testing PowerShell in PowerShell, which isn't that wrong? I'm like, no, in the end, Pester is just PowerShell too. It's just a framework to make it easier to do that thing. But it's this recognition that you've got to write code to validate your code.
Exactly. Pester is PowerShell, mm-hmm. but it is just testing the PowerShell code with just more PowerShell. But,
and I don't want to go back and recap his show, but as I'm talking to other IT folks, the big threshold for me that I see people doing now is this idea that I'm writing scripts that my fellow IT people will use. And so they need to be able to read them. They need to be able to modify them. Like, we need source control and we need, you know, debuggability, maintainability testing around all of them.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the problems that sysadmins have is they stop at the scripter level, what Brandon was kind of getting to there.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled for 2 years almost trying to convince myself that I was a developer. I continued to press forward and, you know, I made my code loosely coupled. I broke it down into modules, and then those modules had functions in them. And then I eventually started testing. And then, you know, I looked over at my developer coworkers and we're doing the same thing. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm kind of a developer, but it took me a long time to admit that,
right,
that I was.
Well, I think in the end, there's the responsibility aspect of we are operations people and we're responsible for the operations of infrastructure within our organization to provide value to the organization. That's our responsibility. Writing code is just a tool to fulfill that responsibility.
Until it becomes the primary way that you interact with that infrastructure.
Right.
And then the code becomes just as important as the infrastructure.
Yeah. Your code is a kind of infrastructure at that point, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's like our ability to onboard a user is defined by this set of code that has to be well managed. Like you really can't afford to have that broken.
I've got a few horror stories about user creation and code that my testing would have definitely caught. So,
Yeah. I remember just putting the date on myself was in the 1990s, telco provided programmatic access to SMS. And so I wrote a little tool that when my server went down, it would send a text message to my phone automatically. Did not put a gate on it. My test run, it sent me 32,767 text messages, which turned out to be the limit of how many you can send to a given account. And this is the old Nokia 9000 phone, so you literally have to open each message individually and delete it. So I call the telco and get bumped through tier one right away when I try to explain the problem. The tier two guy, we talk for a little while trying to figure, you know, looking, okay, and he bumps me to a tier three guy. I get to the tier three guy, I go, hi, I've got a problem. I used your API to create a lot of messages. He goes, oh, it's you. So he'd already seen it on the other side. He says, I'm going to delete all these now. Don't do that again. You scared the snot out of us. You know, scripts are power. You can get yourself into trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Lots and lots of trouble. And that's why testing and, you know, having a manageable code is that much more important.
Sure. What are you doing to make your scripts more debuggable?
So in the developer world, microservices are everything. They're everywhere and everybody talks about them and they don't really translate over into the IT world too much. But the one way that I was able to translate them is to have loosely coupled functions inside your code. You want to break it up as much as possible. This is preached in the toolmaking book from Don Jones and Jeff Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the practice that I use the most, is to create really simple, reusable functions as often as I can and break up the code as often and frequently as I can to make it just a smaller coding test space that's just cleaner, and that makes it easier to debug instead of having one monolithic 2,000-line script.
And again, you're just describing normal programming practices. So you just have to embrace this idea that the approaches that programmers are taking, you're the programmer too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very interesting and challenging to sort of deal with that reality. What about stuff like PS debug?
I haven't used PS debug a whole lot.
Okay.
Are you talking about like the command line breakpoints or?
Well, okay, certainly breakpoints are a thing, but you know, PS debug has, you know, you can literally set flags for debugging features so that you can watch your inline log messages come up.
I've only used the debugger with inside Visual Studio Code. It's kind of been my one-stop shop for all things PowerShell editing and writing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, might even be a better way. I mean, making PS debug really do the thing means it's just going to send more messages. It may or may not be useful, but there's a lot of different ways to do it. What's in VS Code that makes your life better?
The debugger program itself made it a lot easier for me. So I kind of played with the debugging inside normal PowerShell command line, but the interface wasn't very friendly to me. And it seemed more of a developer thing at the time. And then VS Code came along and I wrote a couple blog posts on it and got hooked on debugging. I was able to set breakpoints and watches and just made debugging my code so much easier. So I just kind of got hooked on that.
Now you're talking crazy talk that you like debugging.
Oh, I love it. It's so much easier in the debugger and VS Code versus your code doesn't work, so you rip out what you just did, and then that doesn't work, so then you rip out chunks of the code that you just wrote,
right,
and then you run that independently, and then you try to put it all back together. So it's just a way smoother process.
And same thing, like all the more reason to granularize your code well, too, so that you are able to individually test components. But
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't really want to rip my code apart. And until you've shown someone, you know, an executing PowerShell script that then stops at the line you marked as a breakpoint and you can check all the values and figure out where you are, like, it's hard to get your head around how powerful that is.
Absolutely. I mean, I was preaching debugging after I learned it to my teammates, and that sounds cool. And then eventually I would just like hunt them down and I would get a Zoom call with them and start it and be like, no, you got to look at this. Like, look, here's the problem in your code. I would find problems in their code or in my code. And
right.
I would break it open and I'd set a breakpoint and I'd hit F5 and it would stop. And then their eyes would just light up. You know, that light bulb just went off. So
yeah,
exactly. You got to get in there to see the value.
And you have edit continuabilities. You can now make a change to the code and continue executing.
Yes, you can. So you can resume your code. You can actually change the values and the variables mid-execution.
Yeah.
So it can pause at a breakpoint, change it, and just to see what the code path is going to take, you know, because that's a lot of the debugging is trying to keep it in your mind. So keeping it loosely coupled helps there. But you got to keep it in your mind and kind of flow through the debugger and see if it goes through the execution process that you think it's going to.
Yeah.
And having an ability to do that with multiple breakpoints is so valuable in long-running code.
We come back to the same issue of what you mentioned and the listener Brandon mentioned, which is you have to acknowledge that you're being a developer. And so debugging tools and thinking about workflow and stuff, getting your headspace into how that chunk of PowerShell actually executes, you know, they're not single statements anymore. They're a lot more complex than that. Any other tools that you count on? Obviously, you need the PowerShell plugin for Visual Studio Code, but do you have other bits and pieces that you add to VS Code that you like?
I love the auto formatting feature. So you can add some custom rules that I stole from the best practices of the DSC formatting. So I love that because you can just right click format section or format your entire script and it does some indenting rules. Saves me a ton of time.
And again, very programming thinking. It's like layout of code matters.
Mm-hmm.
Legibility of your code matters if you're going to fix it.
Yeah, you got to make it readable.
Mm-hmm. And the color coding too. It's funny how much a difference that makes when you're trying to figure out what something does.
Oh, that's a great point. I play around with my color schemes all the time just to keep it interesting.
Black background or white background?
Black.
There you go. Yeah.
White when presenting, but black when I'm coding.
You know, there are all these little things that are about making yourself comfortable so that you are able to stay in the focus point of where are we in the execution path? What's going on inside this code?
A great feature of VS Code, aside from the debugger, is then mode. So you can kind of just worry about your code screen and the debugger. You can have that panel open, but it makes the code editor full screen and just removes all distraction. So that is another tip that I would give people looking to have more focus while they're debugging.
Nice.
Yeah. Or writing code.
Yeah, following along with all of that in detail and just, you know, just the ability to break and then be able to read where you are. It's funny when you're reading your own code too and wondering, what was I thinking when I wrote this?
Oh, that happens all the time.
And I don't mean to use onboarding as a scenario, but it's such a good scenario because it's one of those things that just seems to build up over time that you have all these subscripts of the specific tasks for an onboard. And then you have the sort of master script for onboarding that calls to each one of them depending on, you know, who the person being onboarded is. Now you get into a number of execution paths where you just don't know what the thing's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, you could onboard and you need to create a share or you need to add them to a group, all depending on the user's information. So each of those could be independent functions and how do you debug that is greatly going to be determined on how easy your code is to read and how separated it is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's just there's more steps to any of those things than you realize. Actually, we should take a quick break here for an important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by SQL Intersection. 8 full-day workshops and over 40 technology-focused sessions make SQL Intersection a unique source of the best information around SQL Server from real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team. You'll learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as learn about the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, cloud, as well as new features in SQL Server 2016 and 2017. It's time to determine your migration strategy, and SQL Intersection is the place to figure out the best way to do it. Come to SQL Intersection at the Swan Hotel in Orlando, March 25th to 28th. Use code RUNAS to get your discount on your registration at SQLIntersection.com, and we'll see you there. And you're back. This is RUNAS Radio. Your host is Richard Campbell, talking to Josh Duffney, talking about debugging PowerShell. Have you played with the what-if features in PowerShell? Is that a useful tool in this space as well?
I have. So you're talking about the commandlet option that you can do the what-if after the execution?
Right.
Yeah, I use that all the time. I actually write into a lot of my functions that set objects or that set different things, you know, invoke commands and such.
Because you do have to write some code to make what-if work properly.
You do. You have to have an advanced function, and then you have to do some additional logic inside your code. but it gives you the ability to just use that additional parameter when you execute your function. And then when your code executes, it won't actually do the thing it's supposed to. It'll just tell you that it worked. And that's another way you can debug and see if you have any errors before the execution.
Can you run the what if parameter within VS Code so that you can see the code executing, knowing it's not actually going to make any changes, so you can run against that actual data?
You absolutely can. So you could use the what if parameter, or an even better solution to that might be to use Pester and use some unit tests and mock that functionality. But it's all up to what you're comfortable with.
Yeah. What's the architecture that look like when you're going to start mocking out? So you aren't trying to test an individual feature of a larger script or a separate module, and Pester will help you encapsulate that?
Yeah, absolutely. So oftentimes, you know, I like to break out all my code into functions. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately one function will call other functions. So when you're mocking something, you know, your first function then is just going to return whatever expected result, or maybe it sets something. So you can mock that and just return that data without actually executing that sub function that you use.
Right.
So that's kind of the architecture that you kind of lay out in your Pester tests.
In the end, it's just executing code as well, but it allows you to go through the process. Are you starting to go down the path of actually continuous integration for your changes in PowerShell?
In my modules that I write in PowerShell, yes. I have all my internal modules and some public ones hooked up to CI pipelines. So whenever you commit code to master, it goes through and it'll kick off your CI process, which then runs your Pester tests. And then based on that, if it's successful, all your tests pass, then it builds a new module version. So definitely excited to be in the CI world finally.
Interesting. And what's your preferred source control solution?
Git. So I use Git internally, and then I use Git GitHub externally.
Interesting. Yeah. No. You sure you're not a developer?
I'm starting to feel like a little bit like a developer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like I'm not quite there yet. There's still a lot to learn, but I'm sure developers feel the same way.
Well, sure. You know, we've done shows around imposter syndrome and so forth. Like, if you don't feel like an imposter, you're more likely suffering from Dunning-Kruger syndrome. You don't know enough to know you don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I argue that the more expertise you get, the less certain you feel, because you start to understand more and more of just how big the scope of these problem spaces are.
Oh, I definitely second that.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I, as an old guy who's been doing this for a while, pat someone on the shoulder and say, don't worry, that's normal, and it never goes away. It's just, that's normal. That's how it is. You're always going to wonder what you don't know. And, you know, was this really the best way? And it's like, there's no best. There's only good enough, acceptable, as much as I can hope for anything.
That's a lesson that I'm just recently learning to accept. It's never going to be absolutely perfect. It's going to be good enough. And then the next time you get the opportunity to do it better.
Right. And or get another shot at it, because you only spend so much time on it.
Absolutely.
I think it's James Joyce who said, no piece of art is ever finished, only abandoned. I feel the same way about source code.
Oh, absolutely. I agree, yeah.
You just have to stop at some point. It's like, I got to go on with the rest of the work. So this now does what I need it to do. It's not as good as it could be, but it's good enough. Frustrating stuff. I think it's also an interesting threshold. I always look at it from a DevOps perspective. When do you throw a party because you have evidence of a sort of evolving as an organization? I love the idea of a different IT person picking up a script that I worked on, checking it, you know, grabbing it from source code, making changes to it, and getting it pushed back in successfully. Do you have that experience?
Yeah, we've had several experiences with that. One of the projects that I've recently worked on, where we created our own provisioning, so to speak, or config management, we've actually had developers start committing changes to their DSC configurations, actually JSON documents in this framework. But they're fixing their own configuration issues. Like one time we ran into an issue, I looked into it, it ended up being a module that was missing on the web boxes. So they actually had that in a different build. So they just ported that over, copied that code over, that check, that section of a resource, and then committed their code in, and then it, through CI/CD, it fixed it. So we're definitely at that point with several projects, both from our customer standpoint, which our customers are developers, and then internally, we're starting to collaborate a lot more on our internal repos. And it's just wonderful to see.
Yeah, you said a number of impressive things there. It's not just an IT guy working on somebody other IT guy's code, but do you have your regular line developers are making contributions as well into stuff that IT folks touch? Like that, to me, talks about a really healthy team.
It's been very healthy to have that opened up. So we have all of our DevOps code opened up. We're starting to get more and more sysadmins involved in this process too. So hopefully we'll have a pretty good flow and ecosystem across all three teams pretty soon.
Nice. And again, it's like to celebrate the fact that we all get along there. I also like the everybody we can break a build now. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Like just the humility that gets shared about you know, that was hard, that sucked, like that, those sorts of things makes for a better team too. Do you have any gauges for where you can judge someone's proficiency in PowerShell? Like, what is the skill level that needs to be there? Or what, when you recognize a skilled person versus a less experienced person in PowerShell?
I think the test for me is the readability of their code.
Interesting. Yeah. And it, I mean, obviously tools like Prettier help that, but it's also, you can write some really obfuscated PowerShell code.
Oh, you can. You can use aliases. It's interesting to see developers write code, developers write PowerShell code, because they write some really interesting code, and they, you know, they obviously, their first thing is to dive right into .NET, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to go straight to that.
Probably too fast.
Way too fast. And there's commandlets available that are easier to read and make it easier on the operations folks. And then you also have the sysadmins that just, they'll sit there and they're kind of stuck on the script mindset where they overcreate this really long script that they have write host in and stuff like that. So to me, gauging someone's proficiency in PowerShell is when they kind of take that next step up and they're writing advanced functions and they're writing modules and they're broken out and their code is easy to read. It's spaced well. It's using parameter validation. Those are the types of things that I look for when I'm judging someone's proficiency in PowerShell.
And interesting that we do fall back on the skills we tend to have. I found that devs tend to avoid the pipelining aspects of PowerShell and arguably make it more complicated because they won't pipeline. Although you certainly can over pipeline too.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that.
Well, and there's a certain mindset that says that's fun, right? Like, hey, this was hard to write. It should be hard to read. That building the most complicated single statement piped execution of PowerShell is like a reward. I wanted one line to do it all.
But when you write code, it's going to be two times as hard to debug. So if you write the most complicated code, then you're not going to be able to debug it.
Yeah. Don't write code at the edge of your ability to code because it takes more ability to be able to debug it. Oh, interesting problem. And you refer to yourself as a DevOps engineer. How do you define that?
That's kind of a really interesting question because my title is a DevOps engineer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have in my, you know, Active Directory account and stuff like that. But really, that's a tough to answer because DevOps really isn't a title.
Right.
It helps define the tool chain that I use. You know, I'm using the CI and the CD tools, but it's more encompassing. I think it kind of hurts our team a little bit as we're the DevOps team. So anything DevOps related like CI or CD, they're going to do. We don't have to worry about it. So I think it can be both good and damaging at the same time, but it is useful in certain scenarios to kind of define the way that I think and the tools that I use.
Right.
So that's the usefulness of it. The harmfulness is it's kind of like the unicorn team that gets to do the things and it's not anyone else's responsibility.
Well, Josh is a DevOps engineer, so I don't have to think about it. He'll take care of that.
Yeah, that's a common thought.
Yeah.
At least that's a perceived thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I won't speak for people, but.
No, and I don't think, you know, again, it's like you want everybody working through this continuous integration mindset, this that we collaborate closely on everything approach. But it does, you know, maybe DevOps leader, like there's a case for someone who leads a charge. But the goal was to have everybody charge with you.
Yeah, I love this quote from, I think it's from Jeff Hackert from Chef, where he says, titles don't matter, but they absolutely do matter. And I feel like that is what it perfectly describes what happens with DevOps engineer titles.
Sure. And what it takes to generate the leadership necessary to get people to come along and play. Although, I mean, I recognize that so much of this is social, which is where you always see me get quoted on things like, the best DevOps device I've ever seen is pizza.
Yeah, collaboration.
Well, when people eat together, they trust each other more. And ultimately, we're trying to generate enough trust. Like, I really appreciate that you've got developers working on the same code base as you're working on, just because when everybody's vulnerable, when everybody's poured their energy into making things and struggle with those things, we have a higher level of trust. We've all seen each other fail and all seen each other succeed. There's no voodoo in any of it.
Yeah, the visibility has just been really crucial there too, because everybody gets to see what's going on, you know, and there's more of a trail. And it's also a language. So this is kind of, I feel like where it's harder to get into the sysadmin barrier. It's really easy to get into the development barrier, our silo, so to speak, because code is what they speak.
Right.
And sysadmins typically, some of them still don't speak that language. So it's a barrier. It's a language barrier, so to speak. Now, if we were to wrap that maybe in some kind of product and put some tools and gadgets on there, that might be easier. But, you know, that's not what we want to do precisely. So we just have to help skill people up to be able to make that their language.
So I presume there's still folks out there that aren't interested in PowerShell so far. But when you have someone coming into your organization new to PowerShell, what's the path you put them on?
The first thing I do always is I recommend the PowerShell in a Month of Lunches book. That's where I started. And the other advice that I say to them is to find some kind of use case. It's to open up the PowerShell terminal, get familiar with a few commands, and find out what it is that you can do in PowerShell. Maybe you just need to create a couple of directories, and it's going to take you four times longer to do that. But learn how to do it in PowerShell and start to get those gears turning and, you know, working those muscles for PowerShell.
That's always going to come back to anything you're going to do more than once.
Yeah.
Just see if you can automate that with PowerShell. That's totally fair. And it's always a specific use case. And they're always going to run into that whole white screen syndrome. Like, okay, I have a blank screen. Now what do I do?
I ran into a lot when I started. And the very first thing that I pulled up was an email report that my boss made me send every morning at 8:00.
Right.
I think it was her way of kind of making sure I was at my desk. Mm-hmm. But then I wrote a PowerShell script to do it and didn't matter if I was at my desk. So
any favorite communities? There's always been this argument that you should never start with no code. There's somebody else who's written something in this space.
The PowerShell forums. I actually started a lot of my IT career and I owe a lot of the beginning years of my IT career to the Spiceworks community.
Right.
Since then, I don't play around there too much anymore, but I'm very active on Twitter, or mm-hmm. I used to be more active. So there's a lot of great people on there. Like I said, the PowerShell.org community.
Yeah.
And then Slack channels. So there's a PowerShell Slack that I'm a part of. A lot of great people there to ask questions to in a more real-time context than a forum. Sometimes it's not the best to ask code questions, but a lot of the problem with coding isn't the code itself, it's the concept. You know, it's how to do this type of thing. And then you get referenced to all sorts of examples, which is great.
I'm channeling my inner John Skeet here as the Stack Overflow God. He said, the process of writing out your problem well enough to actually ask the question in a meaningful way, half the time solves the problem. It annoys me when people half ask a question into a forum where there's just not enough context, not enough information, no effort. And if they actually take the effort to write out the problem well in a forum, often they'll answer their own question. Like it becomes more apparent.
That's happened to me quite a bit.
Yeah, because you do the work. And it's sort of this admission. It says, if I'm going to need help, now I need to think through this in more detail. And the process of doing that sometimes will actually solve the problem.
So I should have mentioned Stack because I grab so many answers from Stack.
Right.
Because the questions have already been answered. Stack's, I guess, so second nature that I almost forgot to mention it.
And Stack or server fault? Not that it really matters, but...
Yeah, I don't even check anymore. Just give me my answer. And that's what I need.
Yeah, that's where you go. Yeah. But it's something that some folks still don't know about Stack Overflow / server fault. It's kind of amazing to consider, but it's where people go. Although it's where you should go these days to search for an answer, not ask a question. The most questions have been answered there. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It is crazy how many questions have been answered there. Because I've had so many questions over the past year or two, more technical around PowerShell and CI and stuff like that, and they've all been answered. I don't think I've asked a question over a year on there because I've just found all the answers that have already been asked.
Yeah. It's part of your job is getting good at finding where the answers are, what they look like.
The keyword ninja.
It's true. Josh, what's next for you? Where can folks see you?
They can find me at my blog, defne.io. They can... find me on Pluralsight. I have authored quite a few courses there. And they can also find me on Twitter at Josh Duffney.
Awesome. Josh Duffney, thanks for coming on the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.